Welcome to Back Fence Unhinged, a conversational spin through the sparkly minutiae of your day, afternoon, or night. You're about to hear a true story about when skateboarders strike back from the man internationally known for his design aesthetic, Aaron Draplin. Then comes the unhinged part. We'll pry open the oyster shell of Aaron's story and uncover the unspoken raw pearls that lie within. Hello, Frayne.
Hello, Andrew. I'm excited about our guest today. You?
I am, yeah. Are you a thrill seeker, a skateboarder?
I'm not a skateboarder, although I always wanted to be. I did roll onto stage once on one of the longboards with some purple and pink Vans with a green band around them that I wore in high school.
Did you manage to stay upright?
I did manage to stay upright.
Impressive.
And it was kind of one of my first stage performances, actually. That's how I rolled out onto it. So, you know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. How about you? How about you? Are you a thrill seeker, Andrew?
No. I just went to Hawaii for my 20th with Susan, and everyone's like, are you going to snorkel? Are you going to do? I'm like, I think we're just going to eat, drink, and get in the ocean, maybe the pool. We're going to see. We're going to see how we feel.
What's the riskiest thing you've ever done with your physical body?
I once went, we were in Idaho, and we went through, like,
I just want right, to say.
Yeah, that's probably the riskier part, because then it's going to be, I went, it was like this, pipe slide into a lake, but it was like 300 feet, which sounds so wimpy, but it was really, like, for me, it was like, all right, the kids did it. They're, like, egging me on.
And you did it?
And I did it.
I
went
in
a slide.
Pipe?
I went through a slide, Frayne.
Okay.
I did it.
Andrew, that I want to celebrate that with you right now. 300 feet of a straight pipe slide.
Yeah. It was scary for
me.
Was
it thrilling?
No, it was terrible. I was like,
terrified.
Like, do it again. I'm like, no, that's it. I'm out. I'm
going
to go rest.
You had one pipe ride.
That was all I needed.
That's all you needed in your life as far as thrill seeking go. Was it like a construction pipe or was it like a built? So it was just like a leftover.
It was pretty janky.
It was janky. That's what we're saying.
I'll say that.
Wow. Okay.
Well, but perhaps our guest will have more thrill-seeking shenanigans to share.
Oh, well, speaking of our guest, let me do a little bit of an introduction. Aaron Draplin entered the world in Detroit, Michigan, and skipping ahead a bit, in 2004 founded the design company that he runs today, Draplin Design Company. After a bunch of years at Snowboard Magazine, he quickly moved from designing graphics for snowboards to creating icons for multinational companies. He travels the world as a speaker, bringing his hilarity and skills to the masses.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome, Hi. Aaron.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so what kinds of thrill-seeking things do you like to do, Aaron?
Well, a long time ago, back in the late 1980s, we were skateboarders and snowboarders. That was a choice that, you know, I come from a small town where there was just sports. That was it. You know, a town of 800 in northern Michigan, Central Lake, Michigan. My parents moved us to Traverse City, Michigan, which would have been out about 13. And that was like the first renaissance of like, wow, there's skate shops and things and stuff to pick from other than just football, basketball, baseball, right?
Right.
Cheerleading or something. So I picked art and I picked skateboarding and but the dangerous side of it, and really what it was we were thinking for ourselves and just having fun,
right?
And taking and watching out for each other, because at that time it was dangerous to be a skateboarder. And I'm not going to say the slurs and stuff, but I had everything called to me, you know, because of being a big kid or being an other and all the other things. So it was kind of a dangerous thing, because what was cool was the jock and the good looking guy and the good looking homecoming queens and all that shit, you know, all that hierarchy. And we could care less because we got to Fugazi. And that kind of taught you that take care of each other. You know, we got front end loaded on all the sort of issues in 1990 that it takes other people a lifetime to learn. It was right in our face, you know, because these activist people from DC, we were singing these lyrics And it was really interesting things like, you know, I don't know, what are those nominal things like, you know, women's rights. That was right in our face. You know, you take care of your buddy who's from the LGBTQ community. You know, that's not two summers ago. That was when I was 15.
Wow. Yeah.
And that came through skateboarding and we'll just say punk rock and record stores and the cool people, we'll just say. You know what I mean? So we were skateboarders and snowboarders, and we would go down to Detroit, 250 miles away, to see the Butthole Surfers or Dinosaur Jr. or Circle Jerks or whatever the hell we were seeing. You know, so it wasn't about who was the coolest and the bestest and the fastest and the best grade point average. It was about taking care of each other, you know, a collective quality, and still hold that today.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm assuming, of course, that the way you've described this, and you said that you got this head start, that this is much the aesthetic that you brought into having your own design company and your own work and everything as well.
Well, what those bands and those things taught us, it wasn't about being anointed. It wasn't about having to earn a credential. You just did it all yourself. And you made your own zines, you made your own bands, you made your own record labels, you made, you know, those things became things that I still love today. But it was, you didn't have to ask for permission. That same kind of recklessness definitely went into the way I started my own business. I just went and did it. And through hard work, stacking a lot of little jobs up on top of themselves, I made just as much as those turds out at Nike. And you can put that, are they one of the benefactors here? I'm sorry, but yeah, hey, I'm just saying, you know, because I got dressed down by those guys, you know, some of those guys, you know, like, well, what do you mean you work in your backyard? What do you mean you work in your basement? What do you mean you work on small things? That definitely came from not knowing any better. And then just, you know, what I did know, you know, I did 4 summers up in Alaska. What I did know, you wash dishes all summer. At the end of the summer, you can get a new computer. It wasn't cool. It's probably a better way to game it in 1996, but that's what I knew. That's what I went and did. I did that for 4 summers. Slow and steady wins the race. And that's how I paid for college and other things and stuff. And, you know, that comes from, like, you know, one of the things I'm running into as I get older, I'm 51 and a half years old, is kids don't work. Like, that was a badge of honor. You had to work in 1988 when you were 14 years old. It was okay to work a crappy job and then get your little reward at the end of that. And that has followed me all the way along. And now all these years later, it's adding up to where I get to coast a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I didn't go for the biggest jobs. I didn't go for the biggest certifications and the biggest, you're the best and you're the worst. I didn't care about any of that shit. That directly comes from the world of skateboarding and snowboarding and just making our own way.
Well, right. There's something about skateboarding too, where you can't fake it. I mean, you can't, I mean, right. and to get to unlock that trick, I mean, you have to do it over and over and over again. And there's some pain and suffering along the way.
Absolutely. You know, my elbow still hurts from a time in a ditch in Las Vegas where I caught a little pebble and went down. It would have been about 97 or 98. And it still hurts. You know, I cracked something, but I didn't have any health care then. I didn't really even think about it, but you know, what was cool about it was whatever level you were at, it was okay to be at that level. No one was measuring that, you know, you don't get through the, you know, as snowboarders, you know, one of the things that's really hard with snowboarding and just apres lifestyle going up to the hill, it's a bunch of rich kids, you know, and we used to like take a broom and go sweep the snow into a lane on a golf course and snowboard there. There's no lift ticket for any of that because, you know, and then we'd go and buy our passes and do our stuff. And it, you know, and it's like, we would go up to the hill and there were guys there measuring who got to go through the skiers, go through the poles the fastest. And then they wear medals and they wear spider suits and all that. We didn't care about any of that. It came from just having fun and being together. Looking at it a new way. Now that DNA goes into everything I do. You know, what's the angle? What are we doing here? Who cares who's the best? Can I just get away with actually enjoying this? Yes. And keep my rent paid? Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I feel like we've talked about skateboarding, which I think parlays right into your story you're going to share with us today. Although that was all a great story to begin this story with. So,
Should I go into my...
Yeah, let's just go ahead.
Okay. Well,
let's go for it.
Okay, so this may or may not be true, but it is definitely true. I just can't say any of the names because who knows from something that happened in 1989 or 1990, you know, how this could ever come back. But here's the deal. Three of us were in a parking lot of an Arby's in Traverse City, Michigan, 6 or 7 blocks from our high school. So it was after school. We're over there. We're skateboarding, right? We're in the parking lot. We're doing a thing called a slappy, where you kind of go up to a edge of a curb. You angle your trucks and you slappy up onto the curb and you grind on this little edge and you come off the thing, and that's called a slappy. Okay, okay. So we're doing little tricks on this edge of this curb, three of us. And it's my turn and my buddy's hitting it and another guy's hitting it. And all of a sudden out of this Arby's, the doors just explode and out come these two frumpy mustache pleated bad parts in the hair manager guys, and they come flying out tucked in and they grab my two buddies and their boards, and there's a commotion. They grab them. I put my board in front of my chest. I turn around and I walk across the street to a Burger King across this, you know, this
so
little,
we're in a fast food okay, alley
this little
somewhere.
Zone this little zone.
Yeah, sure.
This is small town Traverse City, Michigan. It's not that big. At the time, it might have been 30,000 people or something.
Were your friends pretty scared at that? I mean, when they got grabbed and everything?
They got dragged into this Arby's. So I get away. I get away. And I walk away, and I'm in this, you know, this Burger King now. I'm looking across the street, and they're inside. And then I see the cop cars show up, you know, a couple minutes later. And I just slink out, and I skate back downtown, and I go to my old pizza job, Crusted Creations on 14th Street, and I have to wait, and someone's going up the hill to where I live, and I get a catch a ride with one of the delivery drivers. Okay. Well, in this process of these guys getting arrested and in trouble, you know, one of my close friends there, he gets a malicious destruction of property charge, and some weeks later goes to court and gets in trouble. It's on his record, and there's some community service, and his parents are pissed, and the whole bit. And so the other kid, something along the same lines. And after all the dust settles, you know, well, when do we get our boards back from the police? When do we get our boards back from Arby's? And because we got in trouble, we went and did our thing, and now we need our boards back. And there's like this, his parents are involved, and there's a bit of a trail of like, well, we don't know where they're at and all this kind of stuff. You know, maybe the cops have them. Maybe. Well, we had a mole, and we have a mole inside Arby's, one of our buddies.
What? A mole inside Arby's?
And he works at Arby's.
He worked the beef slicer, no doubt.
And he tells this group of us, he said, the boards are underneath the manager's desk.
Oh.
He was in the manager's office getting, you know, who knows, is it paycheck or reamed or who knows what he's getting yelled at. Who knows? And we get this bit of intel. And what do you do with this? So we sit on it for a while. We know they're there. And one afternoon during class, we go on our lunch hour to go skate. And we pull over to this Arby's. Now, what it is, there's the Arby's, it's down on the floor, we'll just say the ground level. There's another like credit union or business or something, you know, some kind of bank or something. It's about a 45 degree angle up. You're about a story up, and we are in their parking lot looking down at this parking lot. And there's the back door of the Arby's. And we're sitting up in this, you know, someone's shitty Toyota Corolla 84 or something. We're in that. We're six of us packed in this thing, skateboards and hotboxing and, you know, playing some unlistenable, you know, Butthole Surfers or something on the thing. And one of the guys is going in for the boards. And we watch him jump out, run down the 45 degree thing to the parking lot. He goes through the parking lot up to the back door. He's kind of looking around and he just tries the back door. The back door opens. And he goes in.
Okay.
Now we're sitting there.
Yeah.
And we're waiting. And
let's there's no cell phones at this time. So do you have any kind of signal?
1989, 1990. We're just waiting.
There's no signal to like let him know that anybody's coming.
He's inside the Arby's, and let's just let the dead air. We're sitting there. What is he doing? Next thing we see, this door explode open, and out comes our buddy with two boards, running across that parking lot, out that back door, up the 45, into the car. We reverse, we rip out, and we get the boards back. Amazing. And we say, what? He says, I just walked in, calm and cool. I walked past the fry line. The guys kind of looked at me. You know, how do they know I'm not, you know, putting an application in? How do they know I'm not starting my new job? They don't know. I go past them. I go find what looks like a door of an office. I try the door. I go in. No one's in the office. I look under the desk. There are the boards. And I hit the, I just grab them and split. Did anyone see you? What's going on? I don't even know. To this day, you know, that is the coolest thing that ever happened to me in my high school existence. I came from a small town. I went to a Catholic school first for 2 years. It was horrific. Get, you know, beat up and you're too big, you're too small, you're too tall, you're too this, you're too that. I was whatever version of that I was. It was just rough. And then I got to go to a public school. And that's where I met all these grizzly scumbag skateboarders, where it wasn't about who was the coolest. It was about just kind of being a little group and watching over each other. So he did this. It happened. I couldn't believe my eyes. My buddies got their boards back. But the coolest part, and this is a little spotty. It's 30 plus years now. The coolest part, 35 years, is that the parents were involved. And some parent called that Arby's and said, where are the boards? And they couldn't find them. And they're getting this runaround. And we can't remember, but it's, we think there might have been a check cut from Arby's to like cover two boards worth. So my buddies got their boards back. And then, of course, got some new stuff too.
A little, you know, double dip.
A little something. Oh, yeah. You know? And I mean, when I think back to this moment, they, he broke in at 2 in the afternoon.
In broad daylight.
And in broad daylight.
To this day.
This is astounding.
I mean, it's just the most beautiful thing. But it's because they weren't, they weren't damaging anything. We weren't damaging anything. You know, we were on the edge of curves.
You were taking what was yours.
You know, yeah. Well, there's that. But I mean, like the idea that the way they treated those two kids, you know, that's the, that was the life of the skateboarder. You got your board confiscated. You never got it back from these police. It just got logged into something. And like, you know, what are you going to do? You get a lawyer, come find it. We just dealt with that stuff. And this is in a small town. You go to the next big town, Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was just that worse in 1990 or 91 or whatever it was. And you go to Detroit and you just, you know, all the way up the food chain. And it's like, you know, we dealt with this stuff. Now it's sponsored by Mountain Dew on, you know, ESPN and everything. Fine. And your kids go to skateboard camp and it's wonderful. Right. But when we were doing it, it was kind of rogue. And this was the time that the skateboarders fought back.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and we got them. And one, and I think my mouth has been agape because it is so crazy that like they were treated like hooligans. You guys were treated like hooligans for riding a skateboard on a curb at an Arby's where there was no cars. You know what I mean? I think that the overreaction of taking the boards and like, what is the, I just like, my question is like, what do you want from that? The police and Arby's, like, these people are, you know, using their time to do a physical activity. They're, you know, creating community, but somehow it's not the right community. It's not the right thing. There's something about it that seems.
Well, I remember my parents saying, like, they just didn't ask you to leave. We would have left.
Right.
That's the first, you know, shot across the bow. We're out of here.
Right.
There were spots we would go to. They were behind places, and those became, you know, spots. And you'd get ran out of those things, but we were back a week later and we were, you know, abusing this. You know, I guess what I'm saying is like, you know, there was just a muscly quality to these guys. And it was really kind of scary. And, you know, the real life ramification of that is just a couple of years after that, let's just say 1993 or something, we were getting ready to come out to Oregon where we all, you know, saved our money over the course of a couple of
summers. This whole crew?
A number of us.
That's, yeah, wow.
That's how we all came out west.
Yeah.
But we would go across at a place called Sault Ste. Marie, which is the one connector. Now here, you guys have an entire land to get over to Vancouver or to get up to somewhere up above in Alberta. You have an entire border, you know?
Right.
There, it's all water, and there's one spot, Sault Ste. Marie, and it's concentrated. And if you have hair like we did, it's the grunge era and whatever, and you have a shirt that says, you know, Dinosaur Jr., you're in trouble.
Over instantly. A flannel. I mean, over
You know, you're picked apart. So we would go up to go to some higher elevation places up in, you know, up in Ontario, 4 or 5 hours away. And you have to go across the border and you would budget because we're going to get stopped. They're going to go through the car. They're going to get the dogs out. You leave all the weed and all the bullshit in some McDonald's parking lot. In fact, it's Andrew, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Today, you could probably still go find a little bowl, as they say in the industry. You know, I'm a teetotaler myself, but probably still in that parking lot. And you'd leave it all over there. But my one buddy, when we went across the border, his malicious destruction property charge that came up on his record.
Oh my God, for skateboarding.
Go to Canada.
About 10 years and he couldn't go across the border.
What? So, for skateboarding at Arby's.
Yep. So that's where that, you know, like, you know, these little things that would follow people along. He did all his community service, he did all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, some big criminal, and it would come up on whatever, you know, antiquated computer record thing they were looking up in different things at the DMV or things like these things. You know, it just followed him around for, you know, we were just skate rats.
Yeah.
You
know, so are you, and it sounds like you're still connected to this group.
Yeah. I talked to the guy this morning, but the names I can never divulge, but one of them starts with J. Anyway,
obviously it's James. So get that out of the way.
There were only, you know, there were 30 of us, that different skate cliques, and that clique, there might've been 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And I was a newcomer. I was in 11th grade, and these guys, a couple of them were seniors, and, you know, I was in a public school, and these were the best skateboarders in town, right? And I got to hang with them. So, you know, a lot of this is like the danger of like letting go. I was a good kid. I still am.
Yeah.
It's like letting go and a little bit more of this kind of rogue element of like, we're going to go do what we want in our own way, and we're going to fight back the way... kind of how we can.
I just think it's so cool their parents were on their side. Because when you first said their parents were involved, I was like, are they on the side of the police?
Oh, they were in trouble and the whole bit, you know. I mean,
right.
No one wants that call, you know. But it's like nowadays, my buddy, you know, whose name starts with G. Uh-huh. And his son comes back from a night of doing graffiti.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly.
Which also starts with G.
I am, you know, like, well, what do you tell him? And I just would say... don't do it on someone's cute little window of their cute little pastry shop.
Yeah.
Don't do it on a cute little coffee. Go underneath.
Any business.
Yeah. Go underneath. Go. Don't do it on the side of a guy's work truck.
Yeah.
Don't do it on this, you know, and but have fun. But you can't tell them just don't, because they're going to go.
Yeah.
You're just going to go. Just do it creatively. You know, like we had to find our spots creatively. We had to session them creatively, and then we had to get away creatively. And I had rules. I wouldn't jump fences. Because as a chunky kid, you know, you go over, you're not going to come back over. And you guys can't see it out there in radio land, but see these 6 stitches? That's because I'm on top of a fence one time, teetering with my backpack and skateboard, skipping class, and I jumped down and caught my hand on the way down on top of the fence. And that's what you're seeing right there.
Yeah, I see.
Frame, see there, right
I
there?
I do.
Okay, so...
I want to read that as a palm reader. What does that mean? On your hand.
Don't skip class and jump sharp fences, you know?
I like this this whole image you painted of the skateboarder culture from that time. You know, I've watched like all the Tony Hawk documentaries.
You know, when we came out west, we came to Portland. There was a rogue element to all their skateboarding. We went to Burnside. Now, we would go at 7 in the morning, because if you went at 4 in the afternoon on a Thursday or Friday, you're going to get kind of checked. You're going to get kind of challenged.
Little locals only.
Well, we had a guy come up to us, this, you know, broken teeth, and come up to us and say, he's holding a 40 ounce. There's no drinking here. To us. And none of us had anything. I said, we're not drinking. We're here to ride, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like, to this day, here's a mini story. I went and saw Red Fang. I used to work down by Burnside.
Uh-huh.
At Olympic Mills Building. I was there for 10 years, 2008 to 2018, when I built my backyard shop and moved in the backyard up on 67th. But I would go over to these like street fairs, and one of them was Danova, killer band, and Red Fang, some buddies of mine.
Yeah.
And I go over to see, you know, Greg and Danova, and they rip it up, and I go over to see Red Fang and all the boys, and they rip it up. And while I'm there, an old skateboarder we knew from when we moved to Bend was living in his car at Burnside, and just straight up came up. You know, if I was 43, 7 or 8 years ago, he just came up to me and he said, "Hey, you have any money? I heard you're doing really good. Can I get $20? And he didn't have, his teeth were all like kind of gone.
Mm.
And I gave him some money.
Yeah, good for you.
So he was still skating.
Yeah.
He was still doing it. And he was up and down the West Coast. And that's something that we ran into, this sort of like, this kind of, whatever little version we had that back, that was okay to be a part of that. It was scary when we got out West. We all got jobs. We all kept our teeth, you know, things like this. And I still see that to this day. There's an element of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also appreciate having also grown up on punk rock and actually in the D.C. area and getting to see Fugazi
really?
A lot.
Okay. Now, before I get in any trouble, how old are you?
I'm 52 and a quarter.
Are you class of 91?
Yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah.
I was young. Okay.
Hey.
But that means that you were young for a lot of that stuff.
Oh yeah.
So did you have the, what was the comp that came out in 89 that had like
Flex Your Head?
That's a little before, but there was the comp that introduced me to all these Soulside and all the Shutter to Thinks and all that stuff. And it was called State of the Nation.
Yep. I had it. Well, and I should have made that connection between, I mean, you'd go to a Fugazi show and on your way in, there would be, you know, petitions to sign.
See,
and it was a political education.
You were 16 years old getting to see that. We only got to hear about it.
Yeah.
That export got to us in the forms of the stickers about equality and, you know, gay rights. And I mean, what an education, you know, and you live that.
Yeah, so, I love it.
All right, that's great. we're gonna cut in now for Bree's Hot Minute. So welcome Bree Hoag, the manager of Powell's Books, and she's gonna give us a couple of book recommendations based on the themes from Aaron's story.
One thing Aaron has on his website that I really love is a whole collection of music recommendations. And looking it over, I was reminded of the memoir Rat Girl by Kristen Hirsch. I'm a fiend for memoirs, and this one is really good. It's funny, smart, and engrossing. Hirsch is a solo performer and a member of the band Throwing Muses. Rat Girl is a look at her life over the span of 1985 and covers topics of bipolar disorder, pregnancy, and the band's experience recording their eponymous album. My second recommendation is a coming-of-age story called We the Animals by Justin Torres. This book has an unnamed narrator with a story of growing up in rural upstate New York, where he shares a deep bond with his brothers. They are a bit wild, running free, and the book touches on topics of alienation and queerness. It's a really beautiful and powerful book. That's it for my Hot Minute. Back to Fran and Andrew.
Well, thank you, Bree.
Thank you, Bree. That was fantastic.
You know, Bree, if you could find it in your heart to really push Draplin Design Company pretty much everything on Abrams Books, you know, we are in our 12th or 13th printing, and I know you guys keep a couple copies there, but maybe juice that up to 4 or 5 because it's still selling. Thanks, Bree. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I have the mic anyway.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, where else can people find you? And find
Wait,
all
are
the
we already
amazing,
done?
Amazing things that
Why
you do.
Why can't this be a long-form thing where we talk about ancient aliens or something for 3 hours? Okay.
We'll have you back for ancient aliens.
Where can they find me?
Yeah.
Well, overpriced coffee houses.
Okay.
Sitting and drawing pictures of Mark Twain and other heroes. I can't look at the news these days for the obvious reasons. But you can go to draplin.com, and we have 385 merch items, all fairly priced, all made by our buddies across the nation here in town. Seizure Palace does all our screen printing. Our stickers are properly screen printed by, you know, ex-skateboard people down in Southern California and then shot up here. You can go to fieldnotesbrand.com, our little memo book company.
I love it.
I tried to pepper the entire staff here with some goodies to get you through the rest of the summer.
Yes.
It's not an easy town to live in. You can go to fieldnotesbrand.com, check us all out. DDC Fonts, I make a couple typefaces. That's the big hits.
And then just to wrap this baby up, what is something, Aaron, that is kind of, you know, maybe can seem petty or innocuous to people that makes you feel a little unhinged?
Unhinged? Where do you want me to start? How about this one? When we're going through the every now and again, the Starbucks drive-thru, yes, we do, every now and again. And they go, Aaron, you mean like double A-Ron? A-A-Ron, was it? From Key and Peele?
Yeah.
I don't want to even say this. I just go, oh, I've never heard of that. Wow. I'll look into that. I hear about 3 times a day.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's all right.
It's all right.
We won't do
that. I can
that
weather
too.
These things.
You can do it.
If that's the height of my worries, being pissed off at some rat kid with some kind of a zimzam in their nose. You can't hear me because they got one of those things in there, you know, clanking around. I always say to them, I go, do you have a hard time with magnets? You know, because all the shit, you know, and that's, yeah, this is where I.
So you're in the get off my lawn phase of your life.
I am 51 and a half years old, and we're there. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to make
you know
this.
That,
I'm sorry
that,
to go.
That Karen is just Aaron with a K.
I do.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Aaron,
thank you,
for coming
Aaron.
On.
Yes. Thank you, Andrew. For
do I have to go? I don't want to. I'm so lonely. You know, it's not easy to get up and cash all those paychecks before noon and then go back to bed.
Well, we owe you $10,000. Don't forget. And also, I want to give big thanks to our fabulous behind-the-scenes editor and producer, Julia Oppenheimer. Frayn Masters, me, is the executive producers. Frayn Masters and Andrew Dixon are co-hosts and co-creators. Thank you to musician and frontman for Losslander, Matt Sheehy, for creating our theme music. And thank you to Powell's Books and Kiln Co-working Space for making this episode and our live shows possible. We recorded this show at X-Ray FM. Find them online at 91.1 or 107.1. And you can find out more information about Andrew, me, and Backfence Storytelling shows and workshops at backfencestorytelling.com. Bye.
Bye. You're so good at that.